ഇമിതാം സ്വിത്കൃതു വേതേ ദൈവദേവനവേദ്യം സാവതമുഖമായാതി തേജ പരമാദാരുണം. O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. O Vajyanatimarandasya Jnanangyana Salakaya Chaksuru Militamina Tajmaisi Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Shaptamina Bhutale Swayam Rupakata Mayam Datati Svambhatantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vidara Shiva Sudhyoda Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is the the son of Drona punished, the title of the chapter. So Ashwatthama, he has released this Brahmastra weapon. This Brahmastra weapon is nuclear energy. So this nuclear energy is not a new thing. Actually, it's very ancient. And it is created by sound. So the sound is very powerful. This is a great science. And when the German scientists, because the Germans were the first ones to translate the Vedic literatures into English, or German, actually they translated into German. And it was, if you notice, that Hitler also used the swastika. The swastika is a Vedic symbol. It represents Artha, Dharma, Kama, Moksha. These are the four benefits, or the four auspiciousness of the human form of life. Dharma means religiosity, artha, economic development. Dharma, artha, kama means sense gratification, and moksha means liberation. So Hitler was very interested in the Aryan civilization because they were considered to be a perfect civilization. Every civilization is striving for perfection. Actually, in the material world, everyone is striving for perfection, individually, collectively. This is called the great struggle for existence. So this science, actually, there was some American scientists, they did some soil research in India. And they found that there was radioactive soil, which was over 5,000 years old, according to their dating system. And they did some research. They found that in the Mahabharata, there was mention of a big battle. This particular battle, the geographical situation was exactly where these scientists were researching. And they found that the nuclear weapons were used on this occasion. And they also found out that this particular area was destroyed by mass nuclear, destruction. So how is it possible that 5,000 years later they could still find traces of radioactivity unless there'd been some nuclear explosion? So this nuclear science is not something new. Actually, Oppenheimer and the other, after the Americans took over Germany, the Russians and Americans were both first to arrive in Berlin and Germany. So the Americans were very clever. They took all the scientists. No matter what these scientists had done, no matter what atrocities they'd done, no matter what kind of demonic weapons, they were the first ones to also make these rockets, doodlebugs. So they were very, very advanced scientists. So it was this scientist, particularly Oppenheimer, he actually was the one that quoted Bhagavad Gita when they did the first nuclear explosion. They asked him, because he was one of the main scientists behind nuclear energy. And he actually quoted the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says that I am within the atom. Because I understand that I am the power in the atom, time within the atom. So the splitting of the atom previously was done through the whether they splitted the actual atom, how they did it, I don't know. But Prabhupada said the science was so fine that they could actually pinpoint the target within the womb, and they could kill the target without actually destroying the womb. That's pretty amazing, because nuclear energy normally destroys everything. So in those days, it wasn't such a gross thing. Of course, what happens is, here also we'll notice that actually they were able to retract the weapon. So there was a science of releasing the weapon, and there was a science of retracting it. We can understand that they had very powerful control over that energy, because if anyone tries to retract a nuclear explosion, they're going to be pretty good, isn't it? Derek's our scientist, so tell you. And once you release that energy is very, very powerful. It's the most powerful energy in the universe, nuclear energy. And of course, this nuclear energy is coming also in the sun. We can understand that the sun is, even according to modern scientists, is very powerful. Of course, they say it's made up of nuclear explosion, but the point is that it's the effulgence of the sun is very powerful. And that power is actually coming from the Supreme Personality of God. That the effulgence of Krishna, this energy, all energy, is coming from Krishna. So this sunshine, it is coming from Krishna. It is a reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. So the Brahma Jyoti, within the Brahma Jyoti, actually Brahman is non-different from Krishna. And everything is situated on Brahman. The whole material creation is situated on Brahman. So Brahmastra, this Brahma Tejas, this is very powerful energy. And it has a brilliant effulgence, like thousands of suns. So generally speaking, in warfare, it was very rare to release this energy. It was not a common act. So as it says previously, that since his life was in danger, he touched water in sanctity and concentrated upon the chanting of the hymns. So this is mantra, hymns. So we see how powerful sound in Vedic science, sound is the nucleus or the basis of everything. Everything is based upon sound. Everything, the whole universe is created from sound. And this is accepted also in other religions, Christian religion, that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was of God, and the Word was God. So this creation of the material universe comes from sound. And we see that the power of sound, earth, water, fire, air, ether, within the ether is sound. I think modern scientists also are discovering this fact. That actually within the ether, subtler than ether is sound. So sound, just like when the big aeroplanes, this Concorde, when it breaks the sound barrier, then you can feel real power, isn't it? So Krishna is that sound. He's that sound within the ether. So therefore, ether, earth, water, fire, ether, this sound is coming. And the subtlest science is how to control the sound. So therefore, this is what the meaning of mantra is. Mantra, actually by mantra, by sound, you can control everything. You can control everything. Just like we see that actually how do these big politicians control? Arjuna, how do they control?
By sound.
By sound. Exactly. They make some propaganda. They make some propaganda that I will make you happy. See? I will make you happy. I will fulfill all your desires. I will give you a big house. You'll be... So many promises are there. So everything is conducted by sound. Practically we see that all the transactions, just like this telecommunications, has become a very big science now. Isn't it, Ravi? Telecommunications, very big science. So by communicating sound, so many exchanges are there, isn't it? So many things, even feelings are exchanged through sound. So sound is very, very important. And of course, the most important sound is transcendental sound. So these mantras, these hymns of the Vedas, there was also hymns for invoking weapons. And if you read the battles between the great demigods, and you'll find that many of the weapons are actually thrown with sound, just like the arrows, just like when you read. It's fascinating when you read the Mahabharata that how one archer could kill thousands of men. Isn't it? I mean, how normally when you throw an arrow, you may hit, you may miss. You see? But they would sanctify with water. They would chant the mantras and then release the arrow. And whatever mantra they chanted accordingly, that particular mantra gave the potency to the arrow. So they could actually produce thousands of arrows with one arrow. You see? Just like if you study it scientifically, just like now, a general on the battlefield, he can order and thousands of guns will go off. Isn't it? He gives the order. You see? But he has to have thousands of men with thousands of guns. So that's gross. Whereas with the Kshatriyas, they would learn the science of mantra. They would learn the science of sound, and they could create things with sound. They could create weapons. Prabhupada said there wasn't just Brahmastra, they could create hurricanes, they could create tornadoes, they could create even earthquakes, all sorts of wonderful things could be created by sound. You see? So the sound is very powerful, and therefore a Vaishnava lives his whole life is based on sound. Isn't it? Our whole lives are centered around sound. In the Kami world, they're also centered around sound. But that sound, that they worship the sound of economic development, the sound of sense gratification. They criticize us for going around chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh yeah, you're all a bunch of weirdos. Always singing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Where's that going to get you? But they're all chanting money, money, give me money, money, money. Where's the money? You see? They're also chanting. They're also chanting so many things. But their object of chanting is to get some material acquisition. They want to bring matter into the service through sound. Therefore, when you go to the university, to the college, to the school, you're educated in sound. And the quality of that sound creates your mentality. Isn't it? If you go to be taught by a dunce, you become a dunce. If you were at school with some idiot was teaching you, you become an idiot. Isn't it? An idiot can only make you an idiot. Isn't it? He can't make you something else because he's an idiot. Just like if you have a donkey teaching class, you become brought. What is that? Hee-haw, hee-haw. You learn how to hee-haw. So the point is that therefore the Brahmana was trained in sound. He was trained in the Vedic mantras. The Vedic mantras, the sound vibrations of the Vedic mantras. And by the quality of that training, he was able to, his potency was there, that the Brahmana, he is the mouth of Vishnu. You see, the Brahmana is the mouth of Lord Vishnu, because he is able to represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead in sound vibration. The Supreme Personality of God, it is represented through the Brahmanas, through the tongue of the Brahmanas. Why? Because the Brahmana was pure. You see, he was pure. Because the Brahmana is pure, therefore he is able to speak on behalf of Vishnu. If he's not pure, then how can he speak Vishnu's words? You see, he won't be able to speak Vishnu word. Therefore, the whole business of Vedic culture was that you had the Brahmanas. They were the highest principle because the Brahmanas were trained up in the Vedic mantras. And actually, it was the Brahmanas who would train the rest of civilization, because from their very childhood, they were educated in the different divisions. Actually, originally the Vedas were never written, they were spoken. Simply by sound vibration, a person could remember everything. Now, in Kali Yuga progresses, sound becomes weaker. That's why we have to keep repeating. Because sound is becoming weak in this age. You see? Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva. You see? You see? Why is it that Krishna said, Nitya, Satatam Kitayanto Mam, that Sata means always, without stop. Lord Chaitanya says simply chant the holy names, chant, chant. Three times he is saying that there's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. Because in this age, sound becomes completely contaminated. Where you're getting your sound, television, radio, all of these contaminated things. They're contaminating the ether. You see, because this sound that you're hearing, just like when you put the television on, what is the sound? The sound is based upon sensuality or bodily concept. It is that sound vibration which is related to the material world entangles you further in the material world. You see? Because of its relationship. Sound has relationship. In the material world it has relationship. So therefore, people are becoming more and more implicated. Just like if I say to you, oh, Rabbi, you're a very handsome boy. See? So naturally, the person's thinking, oh, he's noticed. You see? So by that way, the false ego, because the ego is subtle, sound is subtle, it becomes implicated. You see? It becomes implicated. So in that way, in the material world, everyone is becoming more and more implicated in the complexities of material illusion. Tejo Varni Madamyata. It's a Bhagavatam that this is like the phantasmagoria, this Teja. In the desert there is a, what do you call it, illusion. There is a mirage in the desert. So all of these sounds of the material world, they are the weapons of Maya. Just like here, weapon is created by sound. And it creates a very fearful situation. So in the material world, Maya has a weapon of sound. You see, sound. By that sound, she is keeping us in the material world very nicely. You see? Just like when the boy is with the girl, he likes to hear sweet little things. And she likes to hear sweet little things. What is it? I whisper sweet nothings in your ear. Isn't it? So they like to hear these sweet little sounds. Oh my Gucci Wucci, you're so wonderful. Whatever they say. So that way, they become more and more entangled. By sound, we become more and more entangled. That's why people, they like to hang out with each other, mutual sound vibrations. That's why people like to have friends. So they say nice sweet things in their ear. Nobody likes someone around you who's insulting you, telling you you're a nonsense, and you're a rascal. Who likes that? See? Even if you are a nonsense rascal, you don't want someone to tell you. Isn't it? Even if you're the biggest rascal on the planet, you become very angry if anyone tells you. Because you don't want to hear the truth. We don't want to hear reality. We want to hear some nonsense. So we're very attracted to nonsense. Because this is the disease of the bodily concept of life. Because we're in the bodily concept of life, we want to hear things related to the body. Just like when I was traveling on this boat, there's so many drunks. So many drunks. And their language, they couldn't speak one word without some swear word there. Practically their vocabulary was just one obscenity to another. But one thing was that on the bus coming from the boat to the Basaras, or whatever you call it, bus station. So they were Well, these people were from the country, so they, one woman, she was particularly drunk, so she was attacking these Dubliners verbally, and they were attacking back. The country, you know, you're all rather, you're Dubliners, you're all this, that. So they were becoming very heated. But the point was is that you could see the intensity of bodily contact. Fascinating to see how so much absorbed in that body and so much proud of this little place where this woman was from. I don't know where it was, somewhere out there near Clear or something, some little place. But she was so absorbed in that, and she was ready to die, fight. In the end, it got nearly fisticuffs. This guy was about 6 foot. She was going to attack, and all his family were holding him back, and so much total pandemonium, you know, total chaos over the fact that she didn't like people from Dublin and he didn't like people from the country. But the exchange of sound was interesting because it was totally bodily concept of life. It was totally bodily designation. So the more people are absorbed in the body, the more they're interested in the sound. You see, the more they're interested. That's why the whole Srimad Bhagavatam in the beginning is dealing with the quality of sound, isn't it? It's explaining. Just like even Lord Brahma, in the beginning of creation, what was the first thing he became acquainted with? Sound. Ta and pa. By these two sound vibrations, ta and pa, he was able to put them together in tapasya. So therefore, if we study that, we can understand that the real meaning of sound is tapasya. Atata Brahma Jignasya. That is the actual, the first invocation of the Vedanta Sutra. Atata Brahma Jignasya. Tata means now. That word actually doesn't have an English equivalent, but it means now, at this point. At this point now, Brahma Jignasya. You must become acquainted with Brahman. You must become acquainted with what is Brahman. So therefore, this particular sutra, this Brahma Jignasya, is so important because the human form of life is the only opportunity to acquaint yourself with higher sound. All other species cannot have that facility. What is the difference between the human and all the other types of creatures is that the human is the only creature that can hear, that can discriminate between the quality of sound. If I had a bunch of rabbits in here and I was telling them these things, there will be no communication. Even though they can hear, some creatures can hear from miles away. They're very good hearing, but they can't hear. You understand the point? They can't hear. They can hear, but they can't hear. So that is the position of animal life, that in animal life, they have very good hearing, but what they are hearing is useless. It does not bring them any real benefit. That sound vibration is not actually bringing them anywhere. It is further entangling them in the material world, just like the Prabhupada says that the frog is croaking. You hear these frogs, they got big on the sacks under their thing. Ah! So they make some noise. How do you make it?
Rhythm.
Huh?
Rhythm.
You make a noise. Frog sound.
But they say rhythmic.
Rhythmic sound.
Rhythmic.
Rivet. Who can do it?
Uh-huh.
You hear them in India. So by that sound, the snake can hear also. He is hearing also. The snake can hear. So they're calling out. Actually, what they're doing is they're calling for female. They're calling out female. See, they make this nice sound that's attractive to the female. I don't know how she's attracted to anything. They are attracted to the sound. So they're hoping that if I make a nice sound, so they have to make a certain type of sound to attract the female. But it also attracts the snakes. And the snake like to eat frogs. So Prabhupada says by their croaking, the snake is also aware where to pinpoint that food. Because for the sound, to the snake, the sound is a dinner. You see, for the female it's some sex life, but for the snake it's a dinner. So one man's food is another man's poison. So The sound vibration is attracting his sense gratification to come. That's what he's hoping. He's hoping that actually it's attracting his sense gratification. But really, it's attracting death. You see? It's attracting death. So in the material world, we are making so many sounds, but all they are doing is they're swiftly taking us to death. And there are many, many people who, because of the wrong sound, are dead now. They're dead now. So many people made the wrong sound. Just like how many people, they have actually been in situations where they said the wrong thing at the wrong time, and they end up in a coffin. You see? So this is, the point is that in the material world, all sound is degrading. And in the transcendental level, all sound is elevating. So therefore, this sound, it's interesting to note, because in one sense, Aswatthama, he was trying to get out of his situation by using mantra. Okay, he was thinking that if I invoke this Brahmastra, this will get me out of trouble. And Krishna and Arjuna, he was also making a sound. What was that sound? Exactly. He was glorifying Krishna. So therefore, that is the difference between the karmi and the devotee. That the karmi, to solve his problems, he takes shelter of material sound. You see? And what is the nature of material sound is in the form of economic development and sense gratification. And sometimes dharma, as in the form of empty religiosity. So we see that actually in the material world, that this different types of sound, there is basically, they're all based around religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. You see? They're all based around these things. So, in actuality, this is a very subtle point, but Arjuna, even though there was great danger, because if a Brahmastra is coming at you, it's not a joke. Not a joke. The Brahmastra is a very powerful weapon. But immediately he remembered the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He immediately remembered the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it says, Ashwatthama, the murderer of the princes, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear from Shiva. When the son of the Brahmana, Ashwatthama, saw that his horses were tired, he considered that there was no alternative for protection outside of his using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, nuclear weapon. Since his life was in danger, he touched water and sanctity and concentrated upon the chanting of the hymns for throwing nuclear weapons, although he did not know how to withdraw such weapons. Thereupon a glaring light spread in all directions. It was so fierce that Arjuna thought his own life in danger, so he began to address Lord Shri Krishna. So that is the difference between a demon and a devotee. That the demon will try to take shelter of some material product, some material situation, some material thing. And a devotee will always take shelter of Krishna. So this point is very important. Arjuna said, "O my Lord Shri Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only." So this is very important, that Arjuna is ultimately facing the most powerful weapon on the planet. And he is not, bewildered. Rather, he is actually praying to Krishna that you are the almighty personality of Godhead. Therefore, Arjuna is aware that this tiny Brahmastra, even though it's a huge, powerful weapon, it is only a tiny spark of Krishna's energy. You see, it is only a tiny spark of Krishna's energy. And therefore, he is praying to Krishna. He's actually glorifying Krishna. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creations and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. And yet, although you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation, characterized by religion and so on, for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. So we see that even though Arjuna was being actually attacked by this weapon, still his first business was to glorify Krishna. His first business, his first priority. It's almost like if someone was shooting you and then suddenly you start glorifying Krishna. You see, it's a very powerful lesson here. So in other words, Arjuna really wasn't bothered. He wasn't bothered that now I'm going to die. But he took that opportunity to glorify Krishna. And the same thing was predominant in the coward boys. When the coward boys were faced with Agasura and so many other demons, they weren't fearful. They thought that this is some fun. You see, they thought, here is some fun, let us play. You see? So this is when one is very elevated in Krishna consciousness. That when one is actually very, very advanced in Krishna consciousness, then it is said that the material energy, samasritaye parapalava plavam mahatmadam punya yaso marari, that the material energy is like a very gigantic ocean. You know how big the material energy is? If you take a whole big sack of mustard seeds, this one universe is like one mustard seed. So there are unlimited universes. So the material energy is a very, very powerful ocean of so many different varieties of universes and planets and creations. This one planet is only a tiny speck of dust. And yet, the devotee, that whole material energy becomes reduced. For one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Murari, it becomes reduced like the water in the footprint of a calf. So the devotee is completely fearless. Because he knows that if Krishna wants to destroy me, then there's nothing can save me. And if Krishna wants to save me, there's nothing can destroy me. So therefore a devotee is completely transcendental. It doesn't mean that Krishna always has to save you. That's conditional surrender. If you're thinking that, well, I'll glorify Krishna and then he'll get me out of trouble, that's barter. But actually a devotee glorifies Krishna because simply here is an opportunity to glorify Krishna. Just like Prabhupada said when they were bombing Calcutta, he said, I was laughing. People were running for shelter, they were running. The bombs were raining on Calcutta. You know that? Yeah, Prabhupada was there. He said, I was laughing. Here, Krishna has come. My coward boy. See, coward boy, they're laughing. Oh, look. Krishna has come in another form. He's not come with his flute. You see? Prabhupada, he hasn't come with his flute. He's come as destruction. You see? As destruction. Sometimes Krishna takes many forms. So some form is creation and some form is destruction. Some form is maintenance. These are the three aspects of the Lord within the material, that he creates everything, maintains everything, destroys everything. So Prabhupada was chuckling, oh, here, Krishna has come in another form. So he's feeling some ecstasy. So for the karmi, the situation is very fearful. Destruction. Why is it fearful? Because it shows you your inadequacy. It shows you your total insignificance. You see? Then you really see who you are. That's why people become very embarrassed. They become shocked. You see, when they're in a situation where the material energy shows its naked form, its true form, people become very shocked. They go into shock. Oh, I'm not God after all. You see? My goodness. I've been thinking all this time I was God and suddenly I'm finding out I'm not. Maybe I'm just a very insignificant thing. So they become humble. You see, that's material energies. Just like the when you're in front of a giant tiger, you'll become very humble, won't you? Even Arjuna would be humble if your full-sized Bengali tiger was coming after you.
Monkey humble me.
So then you become humble. So Krishna's energy is there also to make us a little humble. So destruction is the greatest, leveler. It levels everyone. Everybody does their dandavats. Flat out. See? When destruction comes, when death comes, then everyone has to pay their dandavats. So in the material world, nobody wants to pay their dandavats to Krishna. Nobody wants to acknowledge. They're so proud. But then when destruction comes, then everybody has to jump down, isn't it? Just like when someone comes in a bank with a machine gun. Everyone, they hit the floor, dandavats. Isn't it? So they have to pay their dandavats. So this tejasa, the teja, this is the power of God. So that is the difference. When the demon sees some power, then he takes shelter of some material energy. It's like Ashwatthama. He saw the danger of Arjuna, because Arjuna was so angry. And Arjuna was a very powerful kshatriya. So Ashwatthama could understand that this person is going to kill me. So he took shelter of some material thing. And Arjuna, he took shelter of Krishna. Thus you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you. So Prabhupada says in the Purport, it appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees. Everyone is related with the Lord, and he is equal to everyone. Yet he is more inclined to his own men and devotees. So therefore, the devotee can always understand that Krishna is my protector. As Prabhupada says, that Suridam Sarvabhutanam, that the Lord is the Suri, he is the friend of everyone. The Lord is the friend of everyone, therefore he is, especially though, he is the Bhakta Vatsala, he is the friend of the Bhakta. He is known as Bhakta Vatsala, he is very proud of that name. Krishna is very proud of that name, Bhakta Vatsala, because he is the friend of the devotee, the Bhakta. So he is always the shelter of his devotee. So therefore it appears that the Lord is partial. But this seems contradictory, because God should be impartial, isn't it? Because if you read the Gita, you see Krishna says, although everything is resting in me, I am not in it. So he has impartiality to, in the material world, everyone is here to become God, to act like God. So therefore Krishna does not interfere. But if one turns to him in love, then Krishna, because he's a person, and because he has eternal love and relationship with that devotee, therefore that devotee becomes very dear. But the partiality is not, contradictory, because actually the devotee he is a kinchana. He has no other shelter. He has no other shelter than Krishna. Therefore Krishna is obliged to that devotee. Just like if Prabhupada says, if children are in danger, the mother will automatically go for their own child. It's natural. Because the child is dependent. There's a natural bond, a natural link. So the devotees, they are linked up with Krishna in devotion or love. So therefore Krishna, yayamam prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, Krishna says, I reciprocate. So Arjuna, because he was totally 100% surrendered to Krishna, he had no other shelter. It wasn't a question that he was spontaneously, he had no other shelter. So therefore he is inquiring, O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous affluence is spreading it all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. So the devotee is completely surrendered to Krishna. And of course, Krishna, in the next verse, Krishna is replying to Arjuna. So it says, anything that is presented before the personality of God, it should be done, should be so done after due presentation of respectful prayers. So this is one of the 9 processes of Krishna consciousness, to offer prayers to Krishna. And don't wait until you've been attacked by a brahmastra. You don't have to wait until a brahmastra. That's the tendency in the material world. We only pray to Krishna when we're in distress. When things are going okay, that's because of us. And when they're not going okay, it's someone else's fault. Usually we blame God. So generally when things are going haywire, we tend to blame God. So therefore we think, well, I better do a deal with him quick before I get hit by this thing coming at me. So people become very religious when they're going to die, or when they get old, when they get arthritis, when they got incurable diseases. Suddenly they become paramahansas. Suddenly their whole life is God-centered. Up until then, they didn't have any time for God. So don't be that type of devotee. Actually, one should spontaneously be always glorifying Krishna. That's why it says, satatam kirtayantama. The devotee is always sata. Sata means always, without cessation, without stop. One shouldn't just chant his rounds because he's got rounds. You know, just to get them over with and then tie them up like a lasso. Maybe the cowboys, and they used to lasso the horses. So you get your bee bag and you choke it. We shouldn't chant rounds because it's some sort of burden or some hackneyed thing we have to do. Actually, chanting rounds is glorifying Krishna. So the devotee is always eager, always, always, 24 hours a day, he is, oh, and one should learn these nice prayers, try to chant nice prayers to Krishna. Of course, one should chant prayers from the Vedas. That's why we are very interested to chant this Brahma Samhita and so many other prayers. These are very, very important because they invoke transcendental sound. And this transcendental sound is capable of taking us out of the material world. And Prabhupada says, one day when you chant, then Krishna will be there face to face. Simply, it is a question of sincerity. Actually, Krishna is always there, but we just can't see him. But one day we will chant properly, and then Krishna will be there. You see? So therefore, because the sound in Kali Yuga, our minds are so contaminated, so polluted, so the sound, it is not pure. It is very... Of course, the transcendental sound is pure, but our minds are not pure. So we have to purify the mind. Then when the mind is pure, then we can actually chant Sudhana, Sudha, pure now. The moment when we are chanting, we are unfortunately, we are Namaparat or Namapas. But we have to get to the point where Sudha means when our consciousness is pure, when we have Vasudeva consciousness. Pure conscience. Anyway, we'll stop here. Is there any questions at all?
After class, a couple of weeks ago, we had a discussion about praying to Krishna. And we have to accept the spiritual master because we're not really qualified to approach Krishna. So, is it okay just to pray directly to Krishna, or should you do it through the spiritual, always do it through the spiritual master?
No, you can glorify Krishna. Krishna, you see, nobody is qualified to glorify Krishna. No, if you think that you're qualified, if you think that, oh, now I have spiritual master, I'm qualified. What is our glorification? Is it said trying to offer a little ghee lamp to the sun? Suppose you get a little ghee lamp and you try to offer it to the sun. So is the sun going to be very impressed? You're going to say to the sun, hey, look at this, you see the light I got here? You think you're shiny, look at this. So, therefore, our so-called offerings, they're all useless. They're like the babbling of children. So we're not, you know, we might say, hey, Krishna, listen, I want to tell you something, you know, I had this great realization yesterday, some waffle of some realization. This is not the proper way. The proper way is actually to learn from the great acharyas, their prayers. And then by learning their prayers, and then by singing those prayers are so powerful. Just like we're singing Guru Puja, Evening Aarti. These are actually powerful prayers. And they're so powerful that you can enter into them. They have no material relativity. They're not like a relative thing that, oh, today, you know, I found this thing, and Krishna, I could see that in the water, you're there in the water because I went into the water and you're there, you know. It's not like that. These prayers are written under extreme meditation. In other words, when they're just like Jayadeva, all these great, they're actually there. They're seeing this thing. They're in Vrindavan. So when you chant these prayers, you can enter into Vrindavan. It's not a material thing. It's not related to time, place, and circumstance. These are transcendental prayers. So therefore, these are the prayers that we should simply meditate upon. But just as far as our own personal prayer, we can pray to Krishna in so many ways. But in actuality, it is better to follow the great acharyas. See? Better to follow the great acharyas, because that is humility. What have I got to say? You see? But not that we can't speak with Krishna. Actually, if you speak to Krishna, Prabhupada said Krishna will speak with you. You see, you can speak to Krishna. Krishna is there. He's as much there as you are, because he created you, so therefore he's there. So you can speak with Krishna. But it shouldn't be sentimental. The point is that it has to come from in the heart. You see? So that takes time. But there's no disqualification. Krishna consciousness is transcendental, and it is open for everyone, whether he has spiritual master or not got spiritual master or whatever. Krishna is not, you think that Krishna is there and he's saying, oh, can't, he hasn't got a spiritual master. What a shame. I think he's got some sort of advisors like that. Don't listen to him, he doesn't have a spiritual master. Oh, it's not like that. Actually, if you approach Krishna with love, then Krishna will, as they surrender to me, I reward accordingly. See? But, generally speaking, a devotee is very, very humble. So therefore, he naturally doesn't think himself fit. So it's a very delicate science how to approach Krishna. But if one is very, very humble, then one generally shows that by following the great acharyas. In other words, we should meditate on their prayers. But at the same time, we have no other shelter but Krishna. So therefore, we have to follow the example of the great devotees. And it doesn't mean that because I don't have spirit, therefore I can't pray to Krishna. Praying is also part of the process. Wonder. So you have to pray to Krishna. But don't make it hodgepodge. Sentimental rubbish. It should be scientific. The Prabhupada said generally we should learn these prayers of the great acharyas, recite them, and then we'll automatically learn how to pray to Krishna. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jaya.